Welcome to the early days of micromobility. Today we have a very special guest. We have Pascal Smet. Pascal Smet, thank you very much for coming on the early days of micromobility podcast.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Could you maybe share some insights into your background? What led you to become passionate about urban mobility and transportation in Brussels? I saw yesterday actually on Twitter you were going back and forth a little bit about the cycle lanes. So I can see that you're very passionate, which I really like because I'm the same. And the listeners are also very passionate. So please, if you can share some insights.
Yeah, so I started in politics like nearly 40 years ago, which is a long time ago. But then it was more not related to mobility or urban development, more about the nuclear war, inequalities in society. And then at a certain point, I decided to stop with politics. But I went back in politics like 20 years ago, because I was living for a couple of years in Brussels at the time, and still today, of course. And I didn't like a lot what was happening with the city. I was walking a lot. I saw you couldn't bike in the city. It was really, really dangerous at the time. You know, there was all the squares were full with cars, parked cars. The sidewalks, they were pretty small. There were no really terraces, no rooftop bars. All that thing was not there. And so when they gave me the opportunity to go back to politics, I said, yeah, I'm going to do it because it's for my city. And so I entered in it. And, you know, when I do something, I want to have a vision. I want to have an objective. And then, you know, sometimes in politics, it takes some time to change attitudes. And so 20 years ago, Brussels was a very car-oriented city. They shouted at me at the streets, go back to Flanders with your bike because we don't bike in Brussels. And of course, in the northern part of Belgium, Flanders people bike. And I grew up with a bike. So I wanted to bike in Brussels too, like many other people, basically. But there was no space for it. So this became one of my fights in order to not to be against the car, because everybody uses a car once in a while or needs a car once in a while somehow. So I just, you know, it's about redistributing public space. And so that was the start of it, making Brussels a better city, a less car-oriented city, a city with better architecture, public space, very important as the living room, meeting place in a city. So that was been doing the last 20 years.
Did not grow up in Brussels, but you grew up in Flanders.
Yeah.
And you wanted to introduce the bike-friendly way of growing up from Flanders into Brussels. Because actually, yeah, I am also from Flanders. And when I think about it, when I went to elementary school, when I went to high school, we always used our bike. It was a part of life. And when you graduated from elementary, going to high school, everybody received a bike as a gift, so you could go a little bit farther to high school. So it was actually part of our life. We used it as a way to transport, to go to parties. But when I was studying in at the HUB in Brussels, it was a whole new world because the taxis were driving crazy, the buses were driving crazy. And I was afraid to use the Velo bikes, actually, because it was a little bit too hectic. How do you perceive the evolution of Brussels' transportation landscape during your time in politics? And what significant changes have you witnessed?
Yeah, a lot, of course, changed the last 20 years. And I think when Bloomberg wrote a couple of weeks ago his article about how Brussels can be an example for American cities, I think that is crazy because it is what it is. We came from far. So what did we do? The first thing on bikes was that I wanted to make bikes visible in the city, because like 20 years ago, 25, 20 years ago, cyclists were really an exception. It were pioneers. People were sometimes really risking their lives, and there was no space for cyclists. So the first thing that we did was painting all these bike lanes on the ground in order to say to car drivers, there might be a cyclist coming up here. But not only bike lanes, on every crossroad, we painted like these spaces when the light turns red, that cyclists could go in front of the cars. And when the light turns green, they can start first. So that was important too. We started to put bike racks in the city everywhere. We introduced the bike sharing system, which was at the time still station-based Velo, the Deco system. We also allowed cyclists to take the other way direction in a street so that they could move faster. And of course, we started also with the construction of separated, secured and bike lanes, which is essential if you want to get people, especially women with children or men with children, doesn't matter, to get them on a bike. So this whole thing of measures combined with car-free Sunday, because every once a year we block the whole of the city region of Brussels, 162 square kilometers of cars, and so bikes are the places, you know, all over. So people saw it was possible. And maybe one more thing, we try to change the mentality, because you're right, in the northern part of Belgium, it's more like the northern Scandinavian kind of tradition where the bike is considered as an everyday mean of transport. While in the French-speaking and Latin world part of Europe, the bike is more seen as something for the free time. You know, that's what you use in the weekend if you want to go out and do something. But it's not really seen as a mean of transport. And to some extent, it's understandable, because if you go to the southern part of Belgium, Wallonia, they are much more hilly.
Exactly.
And distances are far, much more far. So that's a little bit understandable. But it's a culture thing. And you also see it in Italy or Spain or the south of France, where cycling is more considered as free time, loisir, and not as things. So it's also about changing the mentality combined with doing infrastructure works, and then you get the result. Because today we have lots of cyclists in Brussels and even traffic jams of cyclists. So who could ever imagine that we were going to have that in Brussels?
Exactly. I can imagine back in the days when you started, it was a little bit, you were maybe an outsider or maybe a revolutionary thinking about bikes, because I guess it was a car-centric society. Because I remember seeing a picture of the Grand Place. It actually used to be a parking. I saw a picture with a lot of like cars, and I couldn't imagine that such a great place, how it is right now, a great place for tourists and everything, that it used to actually be a parking. It just goes to show the mentality from back in the days. So I can imagine for someone, it was hard to change the mentality, to change the course, and to introduce something that people see as a free time thing, like bike, to actually put it in the legislation. I imagine you had to go through a lot of difficulties, and it took some time, and you had to maybe convince people, because it was all new, like the Velo, as you mentioned. The Velo has been around for more than 10 years, I guess. You know, they were quite popular as well with students. So as a prominent figure in Brussels politics, what motivates or what motivated you to focus on reshaping the city's transportation ecosystem and making it more accessible for everyone? So as I mentioned, probably it was not an easy thing. Not everybody would want to, you know, tackle the difficult stuff that nobody has done before, right? Because you were one of the first in Brussels. It was a bit risky. You probably didn't know if it would work out or not. But I assume you were, you know, very passionate, as you just mentioned before, and you had a goal that you wanted to achieve. And at the end of the day, Velo has been around for a long time, and it has been proven to add value to a lot of people. So,
yeah, exactly. The whole thing was to stay focused, know where you wanted to end, convince people, change mentalities. Of course, I was not alone. There were other people, pioneers, other cyclists, sometimes other politicians too. But it was a fight. And the thing that I learned about it was to stay focused, to listen to those who say nothing, because a lot of people are with you, but they are not expressing their view because they just agree with you. You always hear the ones who are against something, and they are very often loudly spoken. And then as a politician, you have also to assume what you want to do. That means if your plan is good, you just go ahead. And then if people don't like it, they don't vote for you. That's what democracy is all about. And a politician is not a sheep running behind people. A politician should lead people. That's for me one of the things. And we don't have enough politicians these days that lead people. They're looking like every opinion poll and looking behind. And of course, let people dream. Show people with pictures how things could be much better. And also, you know, what we also did more recently, we allowed this new form of mobility like car sharing. We were one of the first cities in Brussels to have car sharing. but also bike sharing. You talked about Velo, the station-based system. Today it looks more outdated. It's much more now with free floating bike schemes. So we made a law that was made them easy to come to Brussels. Although we have some behavioral problems with people using the steps, of course. So that we did too. So I think, and also don't forget, a lot investments in public transport, which went together with it. Completely new buses, trams, metros, who look like a car, because in the past public transport always, it was all these colors like green, yellow, fuchsia, things that nobody would buy when they would buy a car. And so it looked like you're sheep and we're giving you sheep transport. No, we want to give luxurious transport to people. And they say, okay, you step in our tram, you step in our metro or bus, you feel something special. So we do the car experience in our public transport, which is, I think, a good thing. Made new tram lines, new bus lines, a new subway line. So that was all very important in order to say to people, hey, listen, we are going to redistribute public space. It's going to be better for the air quality. It's going to be better for the quality of life. You will have nice places and squares where kids can play. You can have a drink. But at the same time, you have alternatives. And that I think is very important to offer at the same time, or first, or at least at the same time, alternatives to people and not just being seen as against the car. And of course, don't underestimate some car lobby and car drivers.
I was going to say, yeah.
It's 70 years of publicity, indoctrination, even of the car industry. So it takes some time to change that mindset. But for me, it's also a generational issue. I think that the younger generation, they understand it, that mobility as a service, if you want a fancy car, you rent a fancy car. If you want to have to do something quickly, you get into a car sharing car. If you want to be fast somewhere in the city, you take a bike. There's a kind of combination, and the younger generation, and whether in age or whether in mind, because someone who is experienced or elderly can be young too of mind, they understand it. And so it's more a question of an elder generation. But we have to take care, because you see in the city that some people are against it for very doctrinal reasons, and they put everything on it. And so it's not always winning, but I think the tide has changed in Brussels, and the mentality has basically changed. And I'm pretty proud if I compare Brussels with 20 years ago and the Brussels of today, with all the bike lanes, with all the cyclists, with all these car-free squares, with this nice public transport. It became a different city, and there's still work to do. There's still a lot of work to do, but I think we're on the right track.
Regarding the whole mentality of being pro car and the car being part of our life, these consultancy companies try to attract them by saying, okay, you will get a car, you will get a card to for a gas. It's still part of our tax system, and I think Belgium is really very well known for this. And I don't really see it changing that soon. What is your opinion on that? Because I guess we will have to tackle the tax benefits as well, because it plays a big role overall, right? If everybody that goes to work gets a car as part of a benefit, that will always play a part of how people travel to Brussels, right? Because a lot of people work in Brussels and they all get a car. What is your opinion on that? And how do you think? Can we change it? Maybe you already talked about car sharing. We have parkings around Brussels where people can park and then take the tram or the metro to enter. So there are already solutions. But how can we make a bigger impact over time? What is your opinion on this?
But when it's not paid in money, but paid with a car or a gasoline card, they have to pay less taxes on it, the employer. That's the way it is, and it has to be changed. Basically, it has to be changed. I think some people need that, and there are people who really need a car, so you could continue to do that. But the ones who don't need a car, you have to give other possibilities, like a mobility budget, or if someone says you live outside Brussels, you work in Brussels, you want to move to Brussels, we will pay you the moving costs, we will intervene in the rent of your apartment. Things like that you can do to put alternatives to push people more into to live into cities. So that's the kind of thing I think we should reform much more. And it's true, everybody says that the way that we have this federal tax system is promoting company cars. And initially, company cars were, what's for managers. But now the lower, 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 lower management, nearly everybody, just an IT consultant, will get a company car. And it's a way to attract people. So, yeah, it's, I think you should not abolish it at once because that will not be easy. But I think you should reform it and give real alternatives to people. And then you will see when people get real alternatives that they will start to choose. But you're right, too. In the city itself, we should continue, and I'm a little bit sad that my predecessor on mobility stopped constructing transit parkings. I think that we should do that. I think also that we need this metro line today in Brussels to Bordeaux, where we can build a big transit parking and commuters can put a car there and take the subway. Same thing, direction to Ghent, that we go Groot Bijgaarde, build a subway line there too with a big transit parking. And then at the same time, you can do the entrance way to one lane in every direction, because you can say to people, okay, you have the alternative of the subway. So, yeah, I think we still need to do, but one of the big challenges that will be have to be addressed in the next legislative period in Brussels will be the financing of everything of that, because that's a big issue. And it's an issue that is already on the table and will be much more on the table the coming months and years. So there is a big challenge, not only for Brussels, but for many other cities, how to finance these costly investments. And one of the things I think that should be changed there is the way that the European Union is calculating the budgets, because today an investment in a subway you cannot spread it over years. It's something that is have to be taken at once in the budget, and that's too much. So I think that has to be, yeah, there are things that has to be changed.
So let's discuss the shared mobility in Brussels, which has been in the news lately. With the growing popularity of shared mobility services like bikes and scooters and shared cars, how do you assess their impact on the daily lives of Brussels? So in your view, how has shared mobility improved the overall accessibility and sustainability of the city of Brussels? If you look at before they were around and how they are now, because obviously we had a time where it was a wild, wild west with 20,000 electric kick scooters, trottinettes all over. Obviously, they were used, but maybe not the right way. So there was some added value. But now the city of Brussels has worked for many years in different communes to regulate it. And I understand that they will only choose two operators and have around 8,000 and dedicated parking. So I guess it will be more regulated. It will be more as an alternative for other mobility options. It will fit together in the whole package, I guess, and it will be a less of a nuisance of seeing scooters, trottinette laying on the ground and so on. So how do you assess the added value, if there is any added value, from looking at your time, from the early beginnings, 20, 30 years ago, to how it is now? And what would have you done better, for example?
There is an added value because for the short distance, the last mile, basically, they are used for the last mile. It's complementary to public transport, especially the bikes, but also the steps. But as you mentioned, the whole thing is that there was a behavioral, and there is still a behavioral problem with the people using the steps, that they are not respecting the traffic rules, that they leave these steps behind everywhere on the sidewalks. But that's a behavioral issue. So what I think when we introduced it, like, 6 years ago and made it easy to come, the whole idea was let them come, we'll see how it works, and then quickly we will respond by regulating the parking space of these things. But unfortunately, it took too long for the responsible people to take their responsibility and start to paint this parking place, designated parking place, limit speed in some areas. And they waited too long. And so there is now a kind of negative feeling, especially around the steps, much less around the bikes. And so Yeah, it's a thing of slow reaction of the government, bad behavior by a part of the population. And I think that we'll see the regulation now is good. You have to regulate it and see how it will turns out. But something else that should be done, I think, is that the public transport operator should include the bikes, the free floating bikes in its public transport offer, because it's complementary to public transport. You live somewhere and you live 500 meters, 1 kilometer, 2 kilometers sometimes of a subway. If you can take a bike, you can go easily go again there. And when you can pay with your subway subscription, then you don't have to buy every time. And in times like today, where life is getting more costly, I think for a lot of people, this would be a real thing. So I asked my predecessor, the one who followed me, to do that, and I think they are now working on it, finally, in order to get that included in the public transport or offer.
How come trains, are so expensive? Or maybe I am imagined, but I
It's
feel like.
relative, you know. You say so expensive, I think you only pay a part of the cost because it costs a lot on the government. They're already paying a lot. If you go to Switzerland, it's very expensive too to take the train. You're in Geneva, you want to go to how I call it again, Luzern, one of these cities there. You know, it's more expensive than a plane ticket, you know, from Brussels to Geneva. So it's not only here. I think it is a lot of money, but if you say I would have taken the car would be more expensive, but you would not realize it. That's the whole thing, because with the gas price, the maintenance of your car,
The
the
parking
less
as well.
value of your car, the parking, if you all count that up, the car is more expensive.
You see, it's all
But
mentality stuff, yeah.
yeah, exactly. It's mentality and it's psychological. And of course, with the train, it all depends when you take it. If you take it in the weekend, the day pass, it's not always that expensive. Everything is relative. You know, sometimes people say, oh, I have to pay 10 euros for a parking lot in Brussels. It's too expensive. Then they go to a bar and they just drink five gin tonics for 17 euros a piece. And then it's okay. You know, it's also about mentality and things, how you feel stuff. So, yeah, it has a price and it costs a lot. I think that being said, that the train should be on time. I think that they should redesign the whole train network. I think the train should be the hard lines. The network would be, you know, the big lines train. Then you complement it with trams or buses. So they have to rethink and see mobility as a whole. And not only the train or the buses, it's a whole thing. But of course, in Belgium, we have a federal government responsible for the trains, with regional government responsible for the buses and the trams and things like that. And we are lucky in Brussels because the Brussels capital region, we can organize our own public transport. But if you look to the city of Antwerp, they have to depend on the land, and the land is from the Flemish government, and they don't always serve the needs of the people of Antwerp. So it's complicated, unfortunately. But then politicians should make it more easier. That's you have leaders.
Indeed, yeah. But I mean, Belgium is a bit, it's a small country, but it's a complicated country. But we seem to make it work, right? Everything
Of
works
course.
perfectly.
It's a very good country, but people living here don't realize it all the time. If people are sick, they should go to the United Kingdom. They can wait 1 year to see a doctor or get an MRI scan.
Yes,
And in
everybody.
Belgium, it's not expensive, it's quickly accessible. And so people don't realize. That's the problem. People don't always see the negative things, but never the positive things.
When things are good, people like to complain, right? It's part of the humanity. But I like Belgium and
I'm
or
glad you
small
do,
country,
but you're
country.
one of us. Yeah, you are Belgian. So,
I've been
yeah.
Belgian ever since for more than 20 years. So
Well, that's what I want to say.
glad
You are
there's.
one of us.
All right. So you've been really at the forefront of Le Vélo in Brussels. You really want to look at big cities that play a role in the world. There's always some things that matter. A good transportation system, whether it's the tram system, whatever, like good integrated. And Velo, like a bike share system, is always something that is important. When you look at city bikes in New York, when you look at Philippe in Paris, I mean, I think Philippe had 40 million rides last year. So that only shows how significant having a good bike share is to a major city. I think if you want to create a major city, you really need to figure out the whole transportation system, including bike share system. So this article is from 2019, and it mentioned the opposition from some Brussels communes regarding the deal for new electric bikes. Can you provide an update on these concerns? Were they addressed? And whether the opposition was resolved satisfactorily?
Well, we did the introduction. It was in at the end of the former period when I was responsible for mobility, but now it's someone else who's responsible. And the whole thing is that, as I understand it, that the way that it is deployed is not that fantastic. And but at the time, it's it was more about the publicity, that was linked to it. Because when the Velo system was introduced, it's a long, long time ago. Right? It was introduced in 2009. At the time, the only way to pay it was through the publicity contract, and there was no money. Nobody was ready to pay money for it. So, like many other cities, like Lyon, like Marseille, I think Paris, it was a combination of publicity, and then of course in some communes. They who are anti-publicity, especially from the Green Party, they oppose not the fact that there were electric bikes, but the fact that it was paid by publicity, more publicity. But that was the only way to proceed. And at the same time, they were not willing to put money in it. So yeah, but the Velo contract is going to stop in 2026, if I'm not wrong, in 3 years. Yeah, I think it was a system, a child of its time, and today we should no longer finance a bike sharing system with publicity. I think that's gone. That was something of another era. Times have changed, so you have to adapt.
Yeah, you made a great point when you mentioned that the communes weren't very keen on investing in it or spending money because I'm also in bike share. I have my own bike share company, so I work with cities, and it's true. They all want to have a good bike share system. But then when you talk about the price, they want to have it for free, or they want to, have a very low price. But obviously, of course, you cannot provide a good service if it's free, right? Because you need to pay people, you need to have a good quality. So I feel like that is sometimes where there's a miscommunication between how cities see a good service and how, operators like the Velo, they obviously want to provide a good service, they want to have a good reputation. But they need to have enough funding to actually achieve that, right? What is your opinion on this from the perspective of being a politician and having worked with operators from the other side? How do you see
Well,
that?
I think I said it earlier. I think that on a bike sharing system, free floating, you need to include it in the public transport. And so that means that it's partly paid by the user and partly paid by the government through general taxes. I think that's the best thing. And then you should also allow private companies to operate. You need some competition to get the prices low. So it's a combination of market and government subsidized offer that you have to bring. But it's important when you have a bike sharing system that it's over the whole territory of the city, that it is affordable to everybody, and you should see it on as a complement on public transport. I think that's the best way to go in the future.
In 2018, as the mobility minister, you reached an agreement with JCDecaux, who was operating or who is still operating a Velo, regarding the introduction of electric bikes. However, the introduction of bikes from Velo wasn't as smooth. Could you provide some insights, if possible, regarding this? Because I remember there were some issues with the batteries early on, or they haven't been able to kind of like introduce electric bikes the way the free-floating operators have done. Can you provide some more insight of this on this? I believe.
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately not. It's true that we did the agreement, but the most execution of it had to be done by no longer me, because that changed to urbanism and no longer mobility. And yeah, there were issues with the battery. I know that. But why it took so long, why there was no action taken, that's something I cannot comment on. You have to ask it on Elke van den Brand, who is responsible for that, and I hope she can give you the answers on that. But unfortunately, I don't have the details on that.
When you look at Velo, last question about Velo, because I think as a student, every student had a Velo student pass, and basically Velo has the best parking spaces around Brussels. You have at the Brocaire, then you have up top, and you have almost close to each bar. You have a Velo station, so it was for students. It's amazing and it's cheap. It's a great way to move around in Brussels. So Velo has had an amazing added value. But what do you think when they introduce the new Velo contract in 2026 or even before? What do you think the added value of Velo will be, taking into account the shared operators, like the free floating?
Yeah,
I
I
guess
think
the free
it's
floating are a bit more expensive, but.
depends. If you put it, as I said earlier, when you include it in the public transport offer, that means that it is operated by a private operator, but it's part of the public transport system. And then you finance it as a government with a subsidy, because then you give a kind of working subsidy. Then it remains affordable, and you could make agreements that you say for students. They already pay very nearly anything for a public transport as a subscription. So yeah, so it would be the same system. I think I got your point that it needs to be affordable for everybody, particularly students. But that should be one of the conditions in the new tender that has to be launched. There is a new tender, and it's true that the station-based Velo stations are well situated in the center, but even when it's free floating, you can keep these station places for the free floating bikes. So it's not something particular problematic in the new tender. It's just a question of organization.
City of Brussels recently launched an mass app, so mobility as a service called Floia.
Well, I downloaded it and checked it. I thought it was a little bit too complicated to download and all the things you have to put in it. But anyway, it's I didn't really use it because I have my public transport subscription already. I have my own bike. I have this. I use free floating bikes too once in a while. So yeah, I don't need it actually. And when I want to move, I take Google Maps. So it's pretty easy to find things.
Okay, well, we just arrived on the third part of this great interview with you. Let's talk about reflection and your legacy. What do you consider your most significant achievements in the field of urban mobility, and what legacy would you like to leave for the city? Because I understand you also do more than, or you did more than urban mobility. You also helped with urban designing. I went to your website. Could you share some memorable moments from your journey in Brussels politics that highlights the transformative impact of shared mobility on the city? Because doing some research, I saw that you were also known, far outside of Belgium, for the things you have done. So could you maybe share some achievements that you are proud of, that you would like to be remembered as, for the building of
Yeah, the
Brussels?
whole transformation of a city for cars to a city for people, and the fact that we made biking popular in Brussels and cycling popular in Brussels, and the whole investment in the public transport, and especially also the change in public space, how important public space is in a city, not only the squares but also the piétonnier, this big car-free street in the center of Brussels. It's my kid, and I was one of the people very strong behind it. That was one of the reasons I went in politics. One of the first interviews I gave was about that street. So I think this whole change of Brussels and pushing it forward, but also the image of Brussels in the world. You know, I did city marketing tour of Brussels. It's a bit less known, but it is important also the way we sell Brussels abroad. And I think we did a major change in that too. We started, it's not finished yet. It's only the beginning. I'm proud of that too. And there's so many things. You know, I made also youth theater in Brussels, the Bronx. I did the main library in Brussels. There are so many things that I've done. And I went in politics to change things. And I'm not gone because I will
I
go
mean, I
back
was going to
anymore.
say
I
this.
will represent myself in June next year. But it's amazing, you know, for me that I've been able and a real honor to do these things, because I, as a politician, or me as a politician, I go in politics to change things, not for being there. Some people go in politics to be there for the status. No, not me. I went in politics to change things. I got a lot of beaten up because, you know, I think I often speak what I think, and then you are an easy target for other people. You know, and but when I look back at the last 20 years, I can say together with other people, I've changed the city, and that gives a good feeling. And now it's time to continue my work, maybe less on mobility, maybe other areas. There's still so much to do in Brussels and so many challenges that have to be taken up. And I think I've been known too as someone who stay focused, who works, who got things done, who moves forward, a lot of energy. I hope that the people after the elections in June 2024 will be giving me a mandate to continue to do so in whatever function it might be. So we'll see, and I hope I can do that.
Yeah, it's actually quite inspiring that after all these decades of politics that you're still, you know, I can see when you're talking about politics that you're really excited to actually come back and work for the people and change. You know, it feels like you're not done yet and you have a lot of things that you still want to do. So yeah, you are very excited about the work laying ahead. Actually, on your official website, you outline a vision for a more sustainable, accessible, and interconnected Brussels. Could you expand on some specific projects or strategies that you have in mind to achieve these goals and make Brussels a more livable city in the coming years? So
Yeah.
you envision places, your vision places a strong emphasis on community engagement, the collaborations with different stakeholders, like successful community-driven initiatives. Do you have some examples of these initiatives that you want to achieve?
You know, Brussels is a city where 70% of the people living here are foreign born or having parents that are foreign born or grandparents that are foreign born, which means that for us, it's very important to build together this city. It's an international city by definition. It's also a young city. And so what I think that we have to do, one of the it's a complete other area than mobility, is to build this feeling of being a Brusselaer, which is there now. It's something new to continue to do that. But the big challenge of Brussels will also to be to pre the governance of the city. It's too complicated with the region, the municipalities, and all these other organs. It has to be simplified, less politicians, more people responsible for things. It's too much ping pong between politicians right now. It's another issue that we will tackle. And another issue that we have to tackle is the whole climate change and how we make the city ready for torrential rains, how with potential drought periods, that means putting much more trees in the streets, much more green in the streets. That means that we have to, the way we build, change that a lot, the way that people live. So the way we insulate homes, and it's a big challenge because one out of the three people living in Brussels are poor and they don't have the money to insulate their homes. But they have to do it because if they don't do it, it's bad for the climate, but it's also bad for the energy prices. So I think the government has to intervene and give rentless loans to these people, and that the government should say, we are going to renovate quarter by quarter neighborhoods in order to insulate the homes. It's necessary. So there are big challenges ahead. And I think one of the big issues is that on a governance based We are not ready for that. So the city has to be more effective in the way it is being governed.
Okay, so those are some initiatives that you are looking to tackle when you introduce yourself in June. I hope
clearly.
You will be able to continue doing your
Thank
work.
You very much for your support.
Where does this love for Brussels comes actually? Because you are from Flanders, but when I, you know, when I hear you talk about Brussels, it's like, you know, Brusselaire, like you said, you know, you really, you are part of Brussels. You love Brussels. I can see it's the same when I was talking to Mr. Koen Kennis, when he was talking about Antwerp, the amazing restaurants and then the museums. You could tell that he's very passionate about his city and that he really wants to make a change. And I have the same feeling when I'm talking to you about Brussels. I can really see that you are part of the city, that you love the city, that you love being in the city, that you love talking about the city, and that you genuinely want to improve the city because you live in the city and you want it to be a great city to live in. So where does this love come from?
I don't know. I guess it is, you know, I'm living here now for 28 years in the city. So I've chosen to live here. We are perfectly imperfect, you know. Brussels is perfectly imperfect. And I would never like to live in a museum. And Brussels is a little bit a combination of a little bit rude, a bit it's unfinished, but at the same time, it has so much charm and the diversity. And yeah, it's just the love of the place. And you, after 28 years, you settle down, you feel like it's home. And I would never go back to the countryside where I'm coming from, actually. And at the time, 28 years ago, I had to decide because I wanted to leave the countryside and to live in a city. And I was doubting a little bit between Brussels and Antwerp because I lived near Antwerp. I studied in Antwerp. And Antwerp is also a wonderful city. But I chose for Brussels. I chose Brussels at the time because it's a bigger city, an international city. It's something more different. And I didn't want to commute because then if I chose an Antwerp, I had to commute every day because I worked in Brussels. So I never regretted the choice, but there was a love to, as you say it, to make the city better. And when you travel, which I do, you see so many examples of other cities who are doing great stuff. And then I always had the feeling I want to do this in Brussels too. So it's a combination of love and energy to do something with that love. And that's the reason why I accepted 20 years ago to go back to politics, because I always said I didn't want to be in politics anymore. Actually, I don't like politics. And but
you've been in for a long time.
Yeah, it's the way to change things. So, and I've always said, as long as I can change things, I will be there. So, and as you said, I feel the story is not finished yet, but maybe on another track to work for the cities and for the city. And so we will see the coming months. It will be exciting, the time, and see what the people of Brussels think about it. So
I will watch from the sideline, and I hope you will get elected again. I'm pretty sure about that. To kind of like end this podcast interview, thank you very much for the time. We have many listeners, not only from Belgium, but also from outside of Belgium, who are mobility politicians or regulators who are also tackling the mobility issue, which is quite a difficult issue. Is there a message that you would like to give to these people who are still struggling with some mobility issues that you maybe might have resolved through your career of many decades? What would you say, what would you tell to these people as a message or advice to, you know, to achieve good mobility?
Let people dream, stay focused, don't give up, and deliver. Because the proof in the pudding is always in eating it, or the cake is always in eating it. So deliver on time. And when the project is good, don't be afraid to realize it. But in democracy, it's clear. When you're wrong, people won't vote for you. When you're right, they will vote for you. So dare, lead, that's what I say. And be ready to get beatings. When you work for the long term and the short term, you will be beaten up. But that's unfortunately probably part of the thing to change society. And you can. If you want, you can.
That's a great way to end this podcast. Thank you very much for
Thank
your
you.
time.
My
And
pleasure.
I'm looking forward to the next steps of your journey in politics and in Brussels. So thank you very much, Pascal Smets.
Thank you.